Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Mark Levy, registration number 11372, assisted by Mr. Jesse Brandt, representing the defendant and appellant in this case. As the court is aware, what we are alleging is error with respect to privilege, and it's a medical privilege. And of course, we all know that the medical privilege is not waived as to all issues, but again, it is without question that when you put your medical condition at issue and or your medical condition is in controversy, there is waiver. So there is a line, and what this case about is kind of where that line is, but we know there is one. And so, for example, and what our presentation is, and we think this case is kind of simple, that if you say to the fact finder, injuries gave me clinical depression for which I need medication you should pay for, that is then a waiver of that medical condition. Now, I think there's a whole lot of this law that is sort of jumbled up into maybe special protection, if I could sort of use that word, for mental conditions. But again, if that's something you're claiming, you have then put it in controversy. And if the facts are such that it places the facts in controversy, then you have then placed it in controversy. I think there's actually a twofold analysis here. Versus, I have pain, I've been involved in an accident, I didn't like going to the doctor, I missed some of my kids' stuff, I had some sleepless nights. That's called general emotional distress. And again, the case law is pretty clear with these statements as to general emotional distress claims do not constitute a waiver of any mental illness treatment that you have had or mental condition treatment that you have had. But if you are presenting a clinical diagnosis, and that's what happened here, is Ms. Beecher presented clinical diagnoses of things like depression and anxiety disorder, for which she was prescribed, received, and the trial court gave her money for medications for those diagnosed clinical items. So we start off with a motion to compel, and the motion to compel is essentially responded to by counsel representing that we will not be making a claim for any particular emotional distress, only general emotional distress.
Didn't the plaintiff at one time say she didn't want to put her mental condition in issue?
She did, but she then proceeded to do so. That's what we think is what I'll call sort of the oxymoron of this case, or it's just a classic catch-22.
Have you cited any cases in your brief, counsel, in which they sought damages for depression and that allowed them to have either a waiver of the privilege or a court-ordered examination?
Yes, sir. And again, this is why I think this case is very, very simple.
What cases are those?
That's the Alcon case, where the Colorado Supreme Court, and this is pretty much the seminal case on this issue. And this is why I don't understand all the debate here, but then again, I've been accused of not understanding things. But at page 741, that's 113 P3rd 735, but this is the big deal case. This is the one that goes through and talks about all of these issues, etc. And at page 741, it says, Alcon has not injected her physical condition into the case such that she waived it, et cetera, for all the records. Then it says specifically, Alcon has waived her privilege with respect to records pertaining to, quote, lower back pain, neck and shoulder pain, chipped tooth, and depression. So it is specifically noted in the Alcon case. And then if you go forward to the Hoffman case, which then also quotes the Johnson case, they say very, very similar things. The Hoffman case, which I think is the which predated Alcon. It's important to see here that Alcon was a 2005 case. Hoffman was a 2004 case. And in Hoffman, it says, because Johnson, and they were talking about the Johnson case, and this is 87 P3rd 858 at page, not exactly, it's page 6 of the opinion that I have here. I'll get back to that. Because Johnson, and again, talking about the Johnson case, it is also a big case here. Because Johnson did not seek counseling for emotional distress related to the accident, did not seek compensation for psychiatric or counseling expenses, and did not plan to call any expert witnesses regarding her emotional distress damages, we found that she had not waived her privilege. And then went on to say, we were unwilling to find waiver under circumstances where the plaintiff has not alleged any unique psychological harm and where the plaintiff's claim is unrelated to any mental health counseling which the plaintiff had sought. Now, that's just not the case here for two reasons. Number one reason is, in responses to interrogatories, and this is Exhibit B to the reply brief on the motion to compel, at page 4, and this was the distinction in Hoffman. The distinction in Hoffman was, just because you answered the discovery correctly doesn't mean you have waived the condition. But here the question was, interrogatory number 7, do you attribute any physical, mental, or emotional injuries to the incident? If your answer is no, do not answer interrogatory 6.2 through 6.7. And here the answer is, yes, I do, i.e. attribute any physical, mental, or emotional injuries. And then identify each injuries. And what she says, I suffered injuries to, and this is in June of 2009, I suffered injuries to my neck and thoracic spine as well as both my shoulders and arms. I now suffer from memory loss. I also suffer from increased depression and anxiety. That was her response to the interrogatory, do you attribute to the incident? And then, of course, we have Dr.
She said increased, did she not?
She did say increased. And this is where I get into the, what I think is the catch-22 part of this, is the trial court said that the plaintiff had not put her condition in controversy at the time of the motion to compel, but then in his order, where he awarded, you know, the several hundreds of thousands of dollars, again, if you take a look at page 10 of his order, done March 21st, 2011, he makes two, what I think, in the context of this case, remarkable statements. He talks about the second scenario, that plaintiff's, and again, this is at page 10, that plaintiff's complaints are attributable in part to the accident and in part to her psychological condition, is more likely. So he made a specific finding that her psychological condition did in fact contribute to her medical condition. Joseph Ramos, MD, who examined plaintiff at her attorney's request, concurred with Dr. Meadow that plaintiff had pre-existing psychological issues which were made worse by the accident and which may be interfering with her recovery from it. And then he goes on to say, if anything, two paragraphs down, her pre-existing psychological problems make it more likely that she would be one of those few who do not recover quickly or at all. I conclude the plaintiff sustained permanent injury in the accident. And then the trial court goes on to say, although I am required to apportion, I don't have any evidence from which to apportion. And this is the catch-22 part, because it is not sufficient to say, which the trial court did. The trial court said, it doesn't matter whether or not there's a pre-existing psychological condition, because I'm going to find it's all aggravated, at least by the autopsy.
Well, he said you take her as you find her.
Which is true.
And sort of the thin skull doctrine. And to the extent there's been some increased treatment for depression or psychological problems, it's all included in the accident.
Okay, and I understand, that's exactly what he said.
Why doesn't that finesse it?
And the reason why is because what is that increase? We're entitled to discover. It is then put at issue. It is then in controversy. Now, I'm going to throw out here, there's another reason it's in controversy, and that's because we had competent medical evidence that said, in my opinion, these injuries that they're claiming to the neck and back, et cetera, are contributed to by emotional conditions. So it's not just that she herself put the condition at issue, but the fact. There are facts here. Facts are stubborn things. Facts don't go away. The facts are, again, it's up to the trial of the court to determine, but we get discovery on the question of if there is competent evidence that there is X contributing to Y, we should be entitled to at least discover that material. And again, what's the harm with discovering that material? So it's not just that she put it into controversy, but she did. Dr. Ramos was very clear. She had increased anxiety and increased depression as a result of this. And again, she got identified with these various different medications. In our reply brief at page 5, we go through, I think, an excellent analysis. I didn't do it, but it's an excellent analysis of what factors are present in the Hoffman case and what are different and present in this case. So what we have here is we have trial counsel saying, I'm going to get out from under this rule by saying we're not going to put it in controversy. getting an order saying you don't get any of the prior mental health records, and then presenting a case at trial that presents the prior mental health issues and asking for damages as a result. And or, even if counsel is completely legitimate and ingenuous on every little aspect of it, and or we still have competent evidence. If I come into court and I say, I want damages because my leg hurts, and my doctor says I have a knee problem, and we have competent evidence to show that it might be the ankle and not the knee, we should be entitled to do that kind of discovery.
So did you object to the testimony when it came in that was different than what the party had said they were going to present?
Yes, sir. That was at Dr. Ramos's. Again, that's at page 17 of our brief. We note that Dr. Ramos testified over objection that he did not believe that the possibility of Ms. Beecher's complaints were psychosomatic. Now, this was sort of a preemptive strike that they did on Dr. Lewis. Because on Dr. Lewis, Dr. Ramos said, well, you can't rely on somebody who has not examined the patient. And of course, we didn't have the opportunity to examine the patient. So again, you know, I say this with it's all error, but with some degree of respect, counsel was able to sort of engineer this into a position where they get a motion to exclude X and then hire experts to come in and say X. But it's too late to do anything about it. And that's why there was harm. That's why it made a difference. That's why this was a prejudicial error. And then the last 2 points, again, they're in our brief, but you're not entitled to 9% interest, and that just happened as a result of a glitch because of when the trial court ruled. The trial court said it didn't have jurisdiction, but this court should remand it back down to 3% interest. And I don't understand any way at all how it's appropriate, no matter whose fault it is, to, after the evidence is all closed, to say, oh, by the way, we have $33,000 more evidence we want to present, and the defense cannot challenge it because we didn't have disclosure of it, and at that point, that should never have been disclosed. And then the same thing's true with the medical records by medical records custodian. That's all fine and good to a certain extent, who, what, when, why, but when it gets into opinion testimony, what you're doing there is just eliminating the opportunity for cross-examination. If the medical record is so-and-so came to our office on blank day, fine. But when you include those opinions, the medical opinions, those are required to have a foundation under Rule 702, and we're entitled to cross-examination on it. And with all that, I'm going to reserve the rest of my time unless there are any additional questions. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Damon Davis. I represent Dana Beecher. My attorney number is 34323. In this matter, the trial court appropriately exercised its discretion in ruling at all stages of the case. The court properly denied a Rule 35 exam and access to privileged records because Beecher did not inject her mental health into issue. The court properly admitted Exhibit 18 because its late disclosure was substantially justified and harmless under the Todd test. It properly admitted business records based on the affidavits of records custodians as permitted by the rules of evidence, and it properly awarded post-judgment interest. Turning to the discovery issues, it is important to note that under the abuse of discretion standard, it is not enough for Mr. Burford to show that the court could have granted the relief he requested. Mr. Burford must show that the court was required to grant the relief requested. But in fact, it would have been improper for the court to allow a Rule 35 exam or discovery of privileged medical records because Ms. Beecher's mental health was not an issue in this case.
What about the opponent's citation of the Alcon case saying if you're seeking damages for depression, it is an issue?
Ms. Beecher was not seeking damages for clinical depression. She described her mental distress as including feelings of depression, feelings of anxiety, and under the Hoffman case, simply describing your emotional distress in detail doesn't waive the privilege. In fact, Ms. Beecher specifically disclaimed any damages for any mental health issues. said flat out, I'm not seeking damages for that. She didn't ask for such damages in opening and closing statements, and the court didn't award.
She did get compensated for, what was it, Lexapro and Celexa and other meds that are used to treat depression, right?
There were damages awarded for medications such as Xanax, Trazodone, that can be used to treat mental health issues. They can also be used to treat her physical symptoms. And there was evidence that that's what those medications were used for. So there was a dispute of fact as to whether those medications were being used to treat her physical conditions, such as headache, insomnia, muscle tension, or whether they were being used to treat mental health issues, whether they were for pre-existing condition or not. And since there was a dispute of fact, it was perfectly appropriate to ask the trial judge, who was the finder of fact in this case, resolve that dispute of fact. What are these medications being used for?
But wouldn't it have been useful to resolve that question, even assuming that Celexa has some use other than to treat depression, for the trial judge to have the report, the psychiatric examination, the further information that your opponent was seeking to obtain through this Rule 35 exam?
Well, as I stated, Ms. Beecher specifically disclaimed any damages for mental or emotional distress or the extent that those medications were being used for that, and defendant had adequate evidence to address that issue and addressed it extensively at trial. The court could separate out and say, I think these were being used to treat her physical health. I think they were used to treat issues of anxiety and depression, so I'm not going to award those damages. It's also important to point out, defendant did not object to any of that evidence coming in at trial. Defendant did not object to the cost of those medications being introduced into evidence. There's an exhibit that sets those forth. I believe it's Exhibit 5. There's no objection to the future medical cost for those medications. And the defendant introduced much of the evidence on those medications himself. And once that information is in evidence, the court can use it to find for either side. The court can say, use evidence introduced by the defendant to find for the plaintiff. And that also addresses counsel's issue of saying, well, the court found that there was a psychological component. The court made that finding not based on any information that Ms. Beecher introduced. He made that finding based on information that Mr. Burford introduced.
And having can a party defend on the grounds that, gee, causation is different than what the plaintiff asserts?
Defendant can certainly defend on that ground, but that doesn't waive the physician-patient privilege. The Clark case made it clear the privilege is absolute, and the opposing party cannot inject the other party's mental health so as to get psychological records.
What case made that clear?
The Clark case, Clark v. District Court. That's a Colorado Supreme Court case. And in that case, it was actually the plaintiff attempting to inject the defendant's mental health into issue. And the court said, you can make that attempt, but that does not give you access to the privileged medical records. Additionally, under the persuasive stuff case, that doesn't provide grounds for Rule 35 exam. You have Dr. Warren can competently say, I don't think these injuries were caused by the collision. And he can dispute that. He did competently dispute that. The trial court as the finder of fact disagreed with him, but he was able to competently testify, but that does not inject Ms. Beecher's mental health so as to warrant a Rule 35 exam. And in fact, in most cases, especially cases where there's a lot of soft tissue injury, you're going to have a defense expert who says, I don't think there's a relationship here. Maybe there's a psychological component. Maybe she's just faking it. But the U.S. Supreme Court Schlagenhoff said, if the person doesn't put their own mental health or physical health in issue, very rarely should you allow a Rule 35 exam. Additionally, Dr. Warren does not provide objective evidence that these issues of somatoform disorder or malingering are really present. He says maybe there's some other issues here.
Kenny, you know, it seems to me they are caught in a catch-22. At some point, there is a limitation to what they can present if they cannot have either the prior records or access to your client.
Well, and that's the issue that's created. The privilege says they don't get the records, and under Rule 35, they have to establish both that the medical condition is objectively in issue, or they have to establish, and they have to establish good cause. They have to establish both of those. And simply saying, well, there may be this other disorder out there, we want to do an invasive psychiatric exam and try to find out, that doesn't open the door to a Rule 35 exam. And simply putting the mental, ordinary claim for mental or emotional distress doesn't open the door to a Rule 35 exam. That was the Tyler case. Nor does the desire to explore plaintiff's mental health. As made clear in the Schlagenhoff case, which was followed by Tyler, you gotta have, if the person doesn't put their own mental health into issue, you gotta have some sort of objective evidence that it is an issue to warrant an invasion of their privacy, and that is the harm of the discovery in this case. You're invading the person's privacy by this exam, subjecting them to an exam. You gotta have some objective evidence that there's something wrong. And here, all the defendant could point to is say, well, there's a prior diagnosis of anxiety, there's a prior diagnosis of depression. That doesn't say anything about whether there's a somatoform disorder or malingering.
What is a somatoform disorder?
My understanding of it is it's a mental disorder where you experience pain even though there isn't a physical cause for the pain. And it's an actual diagnosis. Now, in this case, all of Ms. Beecher's treating physicians disagreed with that diagnosis, both from their experience treating her and her desire to get better, and because there were objective physical evidence of injury in the case, both from diagnostic treatments that she received and from physical examinations where they tested and found objective evidence of an injury. So all of her treating physicians rejected the idea that she was either malingering or had a somatoform disorder in this case. So I think the proper test, one, is under Tyler, you don't get a Rule 35 exam for ordinary emotional distress. Two, I think the persuasive case, Turner, from the federal court, says, look, there's a five-factor test we can use to determine when we do an allow a mental exam of a plaintiff. The first factor is there a claim for intentional or negligent infliction of emotional distress? There was not a claim like that in this case. Two, is the plaintiff claiming damages for specific mental disorder? And again, Ms. Beecher disclaimed any damages for psychiatric disorder, said, I'm not seeking them. The trial court, as finder of fact, was aware of that, didn't award her any special damages for it. Three, is there unusually severe emotional distress? That wasn't the case here. Ms. Beecher's emotional distress fits in the ordinary category of an injured person. Four, is the plaintiff going to offer expert testimony on emotional distress or psychiatric injury? That wasn't the case here. Ms. Beecher did not offer any expert testimony on those subjects. Now, Mr. Burford says, well, look at Dr. Ramos. Dr. Ramos was retained to testify to physical injuries. In fact, his initial report, which is Exhibit 50, he made some reference to psychiatric issues that were redacted in order to prevent him from testifying as to psychiatric issues because plaintiff didn't want to inject her mental health into issue. While he did make some references to anxiety and depression and the remainder, that was in a discussion of her history and what the other medical records said. All of his opinions and the discussion and impression section, they were all with regard to physical injuries, causation of physical injuries, future medical treatment, physical injuries, items like that.
You just drew a distinction between anxiety and depression on the one hand and psychiatric issues on the other. I would have thought that the first two were a subset of psychiatric issues. Or am I misunderstanding?
They can be. If you have like a clinical depression or clinical anxiety, and Dr. Ramos wasn't offering any opinions on those subjects, and he wasn't offering opinions on ordinary emotional distress either. He simply laid out some of her physicians have referenced this. I'm not offering opinions on that. I'm offering opinions on her physical condition. Defendants do point to page 5 of Exhibit 51. That was Dr. Ramos's response to defense expert Dr. Oren. Dr. Oren basically said Ms. Beecher's faking her injuries. Dr. Omar said, I disagree. In one sentence of one paragraph, he makes a passing reference to anxiety or depression. Doesn't mean he was retained to testify on it. He was not retained to testify on it. If you look at his direct examination, he wasn't called upon to testify as to anxiety or depression. He was called upon to testify as to physical injuries. So the idea that there was expert testimony on Ms. Beecher's mental health is incorrect. And the fifth factor in the Turner test is whether the plaintiff conceded her mental health was an issue. Ms. Beecher disputed that vigorously. She never conceded it. Turning again to the argument of whether her mental health was put into issue, defendant says that she was seeking damages for treatment for mental health. Again, that's incorrect. Her treating physicians were treating her for her physical injuries. Now, there may have been some incidental references to anxiety or depression that was incidental to the treatment of her physical health. And if you look at their actual billing records, which are exhibits 10 through 18, there is no separate billing for psychiatric or psychological issues. The billing is for treatment of physical issues. If there were any such psychiatric treatment, it was redacted. So plaintiff wasn't seeking any damages for psychiatric treatment. With respect to the medications, she was seeking damages for those to treat her physical conditions.
Counsel says they were awarded, that the damages for psychological treatment or psychiatric treatment subsequent to the accident were in fact awarded.
That's incorrect. And it's incorrect because there was no billing for the doctors for psychiatric or psychological treatment. So there were no damages awarded for psychiatric.
The meds were awarded,
but there's a dispute as to what those medications were used for. And in our brief, we set forth portions of the record where the doctors say this medication is useful to treat Ms. Beecher's insomnia, which was caused by her pain. This medication is useful to treat muscle tension. This medication is useful to treat headache. And again, to the extent that the defendant introduced evidence of the medication usage and that the medication usage might be connected to the collision, and that is inferable from Mr. Burford's evidence, the court was able to make use of that and say, okay, I'm going to award plaintiff damages for that because it ties together based on Mr. Burford's evidence. But Mr. Burford's trial strategy has no effect on the plaintiff's discovery obligations. And if he thinks that the plaintiff is introducing evidence that was not adequately disclosed, he has an obligation to object to that evidence. He can't let that evidence come in, let there be an opinion on it, and then say, oh, well, we should have had discovery on it. Now, the plaintiff's position is she disclaimed those damages, didn't seek them, and that's also reflected in the court's order where the trial judge says, you know, I think I could award damages for future psychological treatment, but plaintiff didn't produce evidence of what that future psychological treatment would be, so I'm not going to award damages for it. So Ms. Beecher stuck to her commitment that she wouldn't seek damages for psychiatric treatment or for psychological damages. In conclusion, the trial court appropriately exercised its discretion in denying a Rule 35 exam and denying access to privileged records and appropriately admitted evidence based on Todd v. Bear Valley and the rules of evidence. Thank you very much.
I have about a minute, sir, as I recall. About 3 minutes. About 3 minutes.
Okay. This is, with all due respect, this is just parsing. And how many doctors can dance on the head of a pin? We have Exhibit 10-5, which is a $132 charge from the family practitioner. And then on Exhibit 21-17, we have the assessment from the family practitioner. And the assessment is fibromyalgia and depression, 311. And so we're parsing this issue of exactly how the doctors build it, and we can get into all that forever as to the relevance of how the doctors build it. But this is what was said. And then in the records produced, and that family for that depression diagnosis were redacted. So it was impossible for the defense to go through and do this difference. Counsel said some things that are just not factually accurate. Dr. Lemos, in fact, was disclosed to testify about increased anxiety and increased depression. I want to comment on somatoform disorder very quickly. It's unintentional. It's not necessarily conscious, but it can also be very relevant to why somebody's not getting better. 99.99% of people are going to get better with this treatment. This plaintiff isn't. Why not? And so that becomes a relevant issue. And then if it, in fact, I think the most amazing thing counsel said was it was a disputed issue of fact as to what these drugs were used for. If that's true, then we were entitled to the discovery, period, end of story. If there is a disputed issue of fact, we're entitled to the discovery. It is clear that the plaintiff was using trazodone, both past and future, Valium, both past and future. Celexa came in afterwards, but that is absolutely undisputed, and then again, that just requires the discovery of this issue. But over and over again, we kept hearing that plaintiff disclaimed any damages for any mental health issues. Those words were spoken, but she also answered interrogatories attributing depression. I read those to you before. We didn't make that up. Those were never amended. She didn't withdraw those. What do you attribute to the incident? Depression. And then going to court. But then finally, and this is at the transcript, it's page 796, January 21, and this is the direct examination of Dr. Ramos. So we just heard counsel say she disclaimed any claim for mental injuries, and we never brought it up. Counsel for plaintiff in direct examination of Dr. Ramos. The one thing that I didn't ask you about, and I wanted to ask you now, is the idea about malingering, faking. Sometimes it's referred to as a somatoform disorder, psychosomatic, you know, the whole idea of secondary gain, blah, blah, blah. So did you consider that in your analysis? Yes. Did you eliminate that? Yes. Can you please give us a basis for eliminating that as an alternative explanation if you have one? Sure. And then there was an objection. Because to eliciting Dr. Ramos's opinion in terms of psychiatric care. So over and over and over again, what we have in this record is we have plaintiff's counsel speaking the words that need to be spoken to set you out from under the need to do this full disclosure, and then coming into court and making the very presentation the counsel said was not an issue, including sworn discovery responses where Ms. Beecher attributed depression to the automobile accident.
Longest breath I think I've ever heard, counsel.
Thank you.
The case will be deemed submitted. We thank counsel for their arguments. The division will be in recess, subject to call, which will be about 5-10 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you all for your time today.